This is American Fashion Podcast. I'm Charles Beckwith, and this is an episode from outside the United States. I was fortunate enough to travel to the Copenhagen Fashion Summit in Denmark, which is a huge conference, probably the most important sustainability conference for fashion in the world, and certainly a place where people talk about innovation. And it was interesting, and I was able to collect a lot of interviews on the floor. My little recorder was not so great, so some of the interviews are a little bit choppy. But I encourage you to listen to the whole thing, because this episode is packed with information about what's coming and trends and really what's happening in the fashion business. I mean, this conference really gives you access to the pulse of the fashion industry. You got to get out of the country to get the global pulse. It doesn't make it in. So the first interview here is with Ruth Farrell, who's the global marketing director for textiles at Eastman. And that's Eastman, which used to be part of Kodak, spun off in 1994. And they have this kind of material called Naya, which is a rebrand of a cellulose material that's been around for a while. You'll hear about that in the interview.
So for me, it's through innovation that real change, like fundamental change at that molecular level, can happen. When we first met Charles, it was at the innovation pitch at the Copenhagen Fashion Summit. And there you had, you know, a set of about 10 innovators who were really trying to strive about how they could deliver sustainability through actually changing, you know, properties of materials, changing processes, changing how we fundamentally think about how about materials. And if you look at some of the big science companies in the world, I mean, what they're really trying to do is deliver solutions that the world needs, be it on sustainability, be it on performance. And it's very exciting to be in that space, because you can really bring around solutions in the circular space, solutions in space and technology. And I think we need it today. And I think innovation has changed as well. Innovation has changed from something that was a white coat in a lab to now innovation with collaboration with different partners in the value chain, with customers, understanding what the consumer is needing, and really brainstorming where a solution might be.
I was surprised by how good and how far along the participants in that innovation pitch stage were at the Copenhagen Fashion Summit. They came with game. Were you surprised as the sponsors of how good they seem to be?
Yeah, we're absolutely delighted, because not only have they thought about, oh, okay, here we can make dyes out of wood bark, or here we can make fabrics out of wine refuse. So, I mean, they were really, really excellent ideas, but they had thought about the value chain, they had thought about how you could bring it to market. And I think most importantly, they were already starting to think about how it can be created at a commercial scale. Because innovation in a lab is one thing, to bring it to that next level where it's commercially available and, you know, can be accessed by a large number of people, you know, is the big jump. And they were definitely, you know, in that space thinking about that. So it was exciting to be part of it. It was exciting to be sponsoring it. And indeed, we're talking to a few of them. So it was very impressive.
So can you tell me a little bit about Naya and the textiles? Do you manufacture the textiles, or you just hold the IP?
Yeah, so if I bring it back to the start, Naya is a cellulosic fiber. It's an acetate yarn, and it's produced from wood pulp, from eucalyptus and pine. And we manufacture that yarn in Kingsport in Tennessee. And then weavers and knitters around the world purchase that yarn from us and then create fabrics that then get integrated into different garments and brand houses. We sell the yarn.
So what can you make out of these cellulosic fibers? Cellulosic, not a T. So what can you make out of the cellulosic fibers?
Huge number of brands are already using it out there. So typically in women's wear, if you saw me today, I am wearing a blend of Naya and silk, and it's very cool in this hot weather. It's really used in women's wear. It's used in lining sometimes, and it's got wonderful features in terms of its hand feel, its drape, very rich color luster. And it's actually been in the market, Charles, for a number of years, since the 30s. And Eastman actually introduced it in the 30s.
In the 1930s?
We stepped to, yeah. So back then, you know, it was used for wedding dresses and ball gowns, in particular because of, you know, the drape and the hand feel is very soft.
I did not realize we were making textiles out of trees in the 1930s. That kind of, I don't have a big textiles background, so that's very surprising to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think back then nobody talked about sustainability. In the last few years, we re-engineered the product. We looked at it from a sustainability perspective, and we relaunched about 2 years ago with the brand name Naya. And it's been a phenomenal few years because there's been so much interest in sustainability. So it's had a different life in this decade versus back in the 30s.
So had production of this material stopped and it was restarted, or there's just rebranding?
We continued over the last few decades to produce, and a number of top brands have continued to use it over the decades. But we have probably not done a huge amount of marketing and active sales in the market. So we, as I said, you know, came out with a new brand and also a new portfolio of products that matched what the market needed.
What's the sustainability angle of this material? Why is this better than pumping oil into some clothing?
So, there's a number of different areas that I would reference. The fact that it's a sustainable origin. So the sourcing, as I said, is from wood pulp, and everything that we use is either from FSC or PEFC certified forests. So very much the sustainable origin there. We don't use any hazardous chemicals. So it's safe and it's environmentally friendly from that perspective. The manufacturing process, which, as I said, is in Kingsport in Tennessee in the US, is very low impact, low tree to yarn carbon and low water footprint. And it's actually a closed loop manufacturing process. And then finally, it's actually biodegradable. So very important in this day and age. So we've recently got our certifications there for biodegradability and fresh water. So it has quite a number of areas from a sustainability perspective that we're very proud of.
That sounds fantastic. So what's next for Naya?
So we're engaging a lot with the market right now. We're still very much still in that launch phase. People are very excited to have a fiber or a yarn that is so versatile. And, you know, I think that's the key. You know, consumers want choice and sustainability is great, but unless the fabric in front of you that's been created from Naya, you know, is beautiful, a high quality and innovative and different and going to be exciting to the end consumer, it doesn't work. So what we're working on now is, you know, developing concept fabrics with our mills that are on trend and very appealing. And we've a nice collaboration going with a number of partners out there. And the interest is high because so many brands have actually made big commitments around sustainability, around using sustainable fibers. And we're trying to help people, you know, with those commitments. by providing something that's interesting and different.
And now on to Copenhagen.
I'm speaking with Lucille Manon from Dimpora. Is that how I say?
Yes, Dimpora.
Tell me a little bit about Dimpora.
Well, we are a startup. We are three of us, and we are making sustainable membranes that are breathable and waterproof for the outdoor industry.
Now, membranes are one of those fashion tech things that it seems like nobody's really talking about yet, but they're going to change everything. Once we really get the smart textiles going and these things are more responsive and the garments are more intelligent, this is going to be revolutionary. So what are you starting with here? What are the first things that you're doing in terms of membranes?
Well, basically, the market on membranes already exists. There are a leader, which is Gore-Tex, for example. And the problem is they are using fluorine products, which is really harmful for your environment. And we wanted an alternative to this. So we bought a product which is made out of polyurethane. This is a polymer. And we are not using fluorine at all. And we are still really breathable and waterproof enough for an application like a jacket or whatever.
And are you looking at additional membranes beyond this? I mean, it seems like what your business is, right?
Yeah, exactly. We are working on other options that are biodegradable, made out of other polymers like polylactic acid. And we even find another product about a solvent-free membrane, because all of the previous membrane, we need solvents in order to make the membrane, because the polymer is inside the solvent. And this is a really promising project that to make solvent-free membranes.
Okay, so if any of our designers that listen or our sourcing people that listen to this show want more information about this, can they get your products right now, or is this still kind of in a beta phase?
Well, they can get our polyurethane, which is our basket product, now if they are interesting. We are still working with the biodegradable membrane, but it's still in R&D engineering in process. If some customer would be interested into making tests out of it, like laminations or whatever, they will be really great.
Okay, so it's dimpora.com, dimpora.com.
Exactly.
It's like porous, the surface.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
So are you attached to a university, or where did this come from?
Yes, we are in the ETH in Zurich, Switzerland.
Oh, that's a famous school. Wasn't Einstein there?
Sorry?
Albert Einstein, didn't he go there?
Yeah, exactly.
What are some of the materials that you're making the membrane out of? The basic materials, not the chemicals, but what do you get them out of?
Yeah, we are working with polymers, as I said,
I think of polymer as plastic, but it's not plastic. What's a polymer?
So the definition of polymer, you can understand it like every plastic is a polymer, but not all polymers are plastics. Because, for example, cellulose is a polymer, it's not plastic.
You have some things here.
Yes.
Is that PLA?
This is the one that is used here for the biodegradable.
Is that made from corn?
Yeah. The problem is this has a more plastic touch than the polyurethane, and this is what it's all about, making a membrane that... is a little bit stretching, etc. And it's, you can see that you have a plastic sound to it. So, yeah, we are working on it with different types of polymer. Our recipe can be made with a lot of different polymers, and this is a patent that we have for the process of making the membrane porous. And this is applicable to a lot of different polymers. So basically, we can use whatever, plug and play projects.
So you participated in the kind of challenge yesterday with the other startups. How'd that go?
Well, it wasn't me. It was Anna, which participated to this project. It was really cool to to make people discover what we do, and some of the brands were really interested into what we're doing, and we had some contacts, so this was the main point of pitching in front of all of these people.
Okay, and you've won the Global Change Award in 2019. This is from the H&M Foundation?
Exactly. We were the second place of this Global Award, and we won a prize for it. And even we are going, well, I'm not, but Anna is going to New York next week with this project, and it's really, really good for us in terms of reputation and help for us as a startup.
As a startup, well, you're an engineer.
I am an engineer, yeah.
Do you want to talk about the company? So this is Dr. Anna Beltzung, who's the CTO of Dempora. Hi, Anna.
Hello.
Anna, can you tell me a little bit about how this has gone for you as a startup company and where you are as a business? And are you looking for investors right now and that sort of thing?
So I have to admit that this whole journey is a huge challenge. I mean, I think everyone can agree on this. Everyone can that started something like that can agree on this. But also we were really lucky to have a lot of help from the government, Swiss government. So there we were funded, and the ETH school also helped a lot. We are still allowed to stay in the labs and research there. So this has all been a really wonderful journey for now. And we really are actually looking for investors. We will start looking now, I think, to find something by the end of this year or next or beginning of next year. And we were approximately looking for plus minus 1 million as a seed A project.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. So the company is called Dempora, D-I-M-P-O-R-A, and the website is dempora.com. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm speaking with Jane Palmer, who is the CEO of Nature Coatings Incorporated. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Jane, tell me about Nature Coatings.
So Nature Coatings transforms wood waste into high-performing black pigments. So basically, we take the little tiny branches and the bark from the timber industry, from FSC certified forests, which are sustainably certified forests in the United States, and use their trash. And we can transform it into a high-performing pigment that's an alternative to petroleum-based carbon black pigment.
So when I think of American forests that get farmed, I think mostly of pine. Is that what you're using?
Well, I can't say, but we use, no, because it's a proprietary process and wood and everything. But we do work with two forests in the U.S.
Well, I guess my question is more, does this come from hardwood or softwood? Or are you using old growth trees, or is this more renewable trees?
These are more renewable trees. So we're not cutting down rainforests, we're not cutting down old growth, we're not damaging any type of ecosystem. They're highly managed, sustainably certified, FSC certified forests. And so we're not doing any damage. Basically what happens is when a tree is cut down for timber, for a house or a table, you have the branches and you have the bark and you have all these leftovers, and the industry has nothing to do with that waste at this point because paper mills have moved offshore. And so the current options for those industries are to either let it sit on the side of the road and emit carbon dioxide, or they burn it and pay to landfill the ash. So it's actually becoming a little bit of a crisis with some states because the states don't know what to do with this waste. So we can take it and give it value to it. We can purchase it and make a circular system with it.
So would you say you're a startup, or is this pretty far along? Do you have a lot of clients? What kind of company are you?
We're a little company. So we're a startup. We just finished 5 different products for different applications, and we've shipped those off to potential customers, and we're getting feedback from them. And assuming all goes well, which we think it will, we'll be able to get into the market within a couple months.
For sourcing people and designers who are listening, how can they find out more information about your company?
Sure. Well, they can go to our website, which is naturecoatingsinc.com, INC.com. And for any designers who are interested in it, the applications include all kinds of printing, so screen printing, digital printing, inkjet printing, rotary, and then also packaging. So we can print on paper, on films, it can be a coating, it can be used for paint. There's a wide variety of applications for it for people who are creative.
Okay, great. The company is Nature Coatings, and it's naturecoatingsinc.com. Jane, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thank you.
I'm speaking with Renana Krebs, who's a fashion designer, and she has a company called Alga Life. And in Israel, there's a big company called Alga Tech, which grows algae. And then Alga Life is turning it into fibers for textiles and also into materials for dyes. Hi.
Hi, exactly.
And you're here with your father, who's your CTO. And
yes, he's the CTO.
He's the engineer.
Yes, exactly. He's coming from the biology field, from the agri-tech industry. And I'm coming with a textile research and expertise, so this is how it came across.
So there's all these different kinds of algae, and they have different properties, and when you put them into a dye, they can release things that are either negative for the body, which you would avoid, and then positive for the body, so it can work like applying cosmetics, only it's your shirt or it's your pants, it's releasing something.
Exactly. I mean, just for you to know, basically 10% of the chemicals you have right now on your clothes is transferring to your skin and body.
Oh, God.
So after understanding this point of view, we really try to understand how we can do it better, how we can reinvent textiles. So it will also benefit you, not only for the environment. So basically, we have eliminated all the chemicals. So we are using zero chemicals, zero fertilizer. If you look on a t-shirt today, you use 2,600 liters of water for one t-shirt. When you use our technology, you need only 500. But also, we are using zero chemicals and zero fertilizer, unlike half kilos of fertilizer and chemicals when you have on one t-shirt. So okay. Just a bit about the numbers.
So can you make an entire t-shirt out of algae, or do you have to add other materials to the yarn?
It depends, yeah. So basically, you can do a blend of algae with the wood, algae with other materials, algae with other cellulosic materials. But you can also now working on a 1% algae closed-loop fibers.
Wow. So what are you developing now? Where does this stuff move to next?
So basically right now, we are focusing on second skin garments. Everything you can imagine on, from socks to underwear, activewear, sportswear, loungewear, everything that really touches your body.
Yeah.
So this is our main focusing. Parallel to this, we got some really interesting offers from the hygiene industry, for example, from the pharma industry. So towards also, again, to really understand how we can really combine, let's say, cosmetics and fashion in a positive way.
Okay, so for the designers and sourcing people listening right now, can they use your materials right now? Can they get your dyes?
Basically, they can have samples of our dyes.
Okay.
Right now, what we're doing is piloting with four big companies. So we are not producing it ourselves. We're just the R&D.
Okay.
We're basically...
You're the IP house.
Yes, Alga Life is a way we call it like a force for good. So basically, we're helping others to be good in their companies.
Okay.
Enabling them. So basically, we can definitely help others in this aspect.
Okay. So it's algalife.com, ALGA-life.com.
Exactly.
I'm speaking with Isaac Nicholson, who is the co-founder and CEO of Circular Systems SPC. Now, SPC, that's a special company.
Social Purpose Corporation.
That's kind of the midpoint between being a normal company and like a B Corp, right?
It's a new corporate designation from Washington State that is basically like B Corp values, but recognized by the state.
So it's like an LLC or an Inc., but it's SPC.
It's purpose-driven, yeah.
From Washington State in the state of Washington,
that's
USA.
That's right,
okay.
Yeah.
So what benefits do you get as a founder for setting up your company in that way?
It's not so much for the founder's benefits. It's more for shareholders and investors. They get no capital gains tax if they keep their money in for 5 years or more.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really promoting investment into social purpose-driven companies.
And you have one of those, Circular Systems. You have three kind of groups of products. You have Orbital, Text Loop, and Agri Loop. Can you walk me through those?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're a material science company focused on turning waste into value, or eliminating the concept of waste is really what we like to talk about, through regenerative and circular technologies.
Okay.
From the top, I would say TexLoop, which is our most commercially advanced technology. This is state-of-art mechanical recycling that we've optimized, and through 20 years of know-how and some trade secrets, we can derive some really good quality in the mechanical recycling of textiles. And we apply those fibers strategically back into different yarn formations, including Orbital. Orbital is our patent-pending spinning technology that's designed to manage shorter staple or lower value recycled fibers into high value, high performance constructions.
Fantastic.
So like these products that you're seeing here have incredible sports performance with no chemical finishing.
I would not think that's recycled. That's a very soft textile.
Yeah, really clean,
and
really
it
consistent.
Feels strong.
It is, and so that's the benefit of the Orbital spinning technology. Is
you also have some denim here.
Yeah, we have some denim there as well. Yeah, so we're using Orbital to get stronger, higher tenacity yarns that are anti-pilling and have these inherent moisture management and easy care functions. That's all from the yarn construction.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we're also using Orbital to apply some new bio-based stretch polyester integrated to the yarns to create stretch for things like denim that's still recyclable and much lower impact than spandex elastane.
Wonderful. So what is AgriLoop then?
So AgriLoop is our pinnacle technology. This has been called the golden chalice of sustainability by Edwin Kay from Hong Kong RITA, one of the world's foremost materials scientists. This is a closed-loop biorefinery that recycles food crop residues, so the biomass left over from food production, which is generally burned or hauled away and left to rot in the tropics, creating significant climate impact and human health impact. So rather than allowing all that carbon to go up into the atmosphere and literally wasting all this incredible, valuable, abundant biomass, we're extracting fiber for textile applications and a host of other industrial co-products using our closed-loop system. The AgriLoop is powered by the waste, and we actually get the biochemicals that we need for upgrading the fiber from the waste as well. And this is really the essence of creating a circular and regenerative technology. There is no waste coming out of the AgriLoop. The only effluents are beneficial.
Wonderful. So you won one of these Global Change Awards. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, so huge honor to be the 2018 first prize winner in the Global Change Awards. The H&M Foundation has been incredibly supportive, and thanks to their help in the last year, I think we've probably jumped forward a good 2 to 3 years in technology and product development with the AgriLoop. We got a significant grant from the foundation that we devoted to our technology development, and it really went a long way to advancing our company.
Now, your table here has been very busy. Every time I've come up to try to interview you all day yesterday, you had customers. How are you doing? Is this going into a lot of big companies already? You have a lot of interest from major vendors?
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate to have many years in the space. So we're a startup, but a startup, you know, from an experienced group of founders, each of us focused for more than 20 years on sustainability and fiber, yarn, textiles, and fashion marketing. So with that, we had some market connectivity already, which was really further enhanced, and we had a lot of validation through the awards and accolades we've had in the last year. So that has really accelerated our commercial development, and we're working with a lot of the biggest and best brands in the world already.
Wonderful. So for the designers and sourcing managers listening, how can they get in touch with you?
You can reach us through our website. Go to circular-systems.com and contact us there. And, yeah, that will go directly to our commercial department, and someone will get back to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm speaking to Cedric Van Hook, who is the founder of Resortex. Can you tell me about Resortex?
Yeah, Resortex is a company that develops stitching threads that dissolve at high temperature or at specific temperatures, and that make disassembly, repair, and recycling of garments really easy. And we help in that manner fashion brands with the transition towards circular economy.
Okay, so basically you put the shirt in the oven and the threads dissolve so you can reuse the material that's there?
Yes, indeed. So you put a stitching thread on the stitching machine, you make your garment or your t-shirt as you would do normally, and if you want to take out buttons or you want to disassemble the product to recycle it more easily, you just heat it up and then the threads dissolve, disappear.
I remember yesterday the judge asked you from the pitch competition about whether you could remove the studs from jeans and that sort of thing. So you're also working on that.
You have the thread here, and
you're working on that next.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, so you're doing a lot of R&D.
Yes, we do. That's one of the highest costs, together with the legal cost, of course, because R&D needs to be protected.
Yeah.
So those are the two biggest costs that we have, next to salaries. But R&D, legal, and salaries is the main cost structure that we have.
Okay. So are you attached to a university or
No, we do it ourselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you a scientist?
I'm an industrial design engineer.
Okay.
Yeah. So I combine design and engineering. We have an environmental scientist in the team. We have a commercial engineer in the team. And we're hiring a mechanical engineer quite soon. Yeah.
So what's the potential impact of what you're doing with this process?
It is quite big. The main issue that we are working on is the manual labor that is involved in sorting and dismantling products. Because recycling processes are there for materials but are not there for products. Means that, for example, when you take a shoe, you have a rubber sole and a leather upper. Rubber and leather both have a different recycling process, so they need to be taken apart. And doing that today is quite labor intense. So what we are working on is to make sure that you don't need labor to be able to do that. That makes a lot of financial sense, and it will make sure that the environmental impact that we want to reach, that we will be able to reach it on a financially and economically feasible way.
I'm thinking about this process and making sure people can visualize this. Mm-hmm. You put the garment into kind of an industrial oven that's built for this, and it raises the temperature to a point where the thread dissolves and the garment does not catch on fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Indeed.
So it's kind of a midpoint.
Indeed.
Okay. Really, people could drop stuff off at a recycling facility and it could just be baked slightly. It's like 200 degrees, that's right?
It's 200 degrees, yeah. It's the cake temperature.
Yeah, and the thread doesn't come apart at lower temperatures. This is a specific activation, chemical activation point.
It's a chemical thermal activation, yeah.
Okay. That's fascinating. Okay, so can people order your thread right now, or is it still coming?
No, we're turning pilots for the moment, and we're also like constructing the big oven plant. We are still in let's say go to market strategy phase.
Yeah.
It's not available commercially for everyone. We're just working with specific brands and specific recyclers.
Are you looking for investors right now?
Yes, we do.
Yes. Okay. What kind of investors are you looking for?
Impact funds, mainly, because we're looking for the two coming years for a complete budget of 1.2 million euros. From that part, we are around 500K we should find from an impact fund. The rest we have covered by grants and by another investment company.
Okay. So has it been good for you being here at the Copenhagen Fashion Summit? Have you been making good connections for what you need to kind of scale what you're doing?
We've made good connections with brands especially. So it's not, of course, a place. It's not an investor affair. So logically, we won't find those easily. But we have a good contact now with, and then we were able to rewarm the network that we already had
with
brands and game changers.
So could a big brand potentially just fund this entirely and get you up to speed?
If they want to, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. We'll ask around. Okay.
Send them through.
So how do people find you online?
On the website. We have a website, which is resortex.com.
R-E-S-O-R-T-E-C-S.com?
Yeah, so from recycling, sorting, and techniques.
Oh, okay.
There the name comes from. Then we have a Facebook page, an Instagram page, and a LinkedIn page, but the last one is not that much used.
Yeah, that seems pretty normal. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm speaking with Cyril from Parley for the Oceans.
Hey, Charles. Thanks for having me.
So you're having a good time here at the Copenhagen Fashion Summit.
Yeah, it's a good time. We don't have so much time left. We know that in the next 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, be it 15 years, we pretty much have to turn this whole industry around because we can't afford anymore to have toxic substances added to our planet, to our environment, to our ecosystem.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you tell me a little bit about your client, which you consider to be the ocean?
I worked a big part of my life for the industry. And in 2012, though, I met a guy, Captain Paul Watson from Sea Shepherd.
Oh, I like that guy. He has a TV show. He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a rock star. He's like the Jay-Z of the environmental movement.
He's a grouchy old sea captain, but yes.
I would describe it as Santa Claus in a pirate costume.
Yes.
So meeting him revealed something I didn't know before, that 2048, he assumed, would the oceans die. And I found that provoking. I found that actually mind-blowing. And the moment I heard about that from him, I called my partner in New York and I said, listen, we have to stop doing what we do. We have to start an environmental organization because I don't feel that this is evolving fast enough.
Okay, so how did you set about trying to change it? What are you doing?
When you look at all these big environmental issues that we are facing today, like climate change, overfishing, but also pollution, especially plastic pollution, that always leads you back to how we run business, how we understand economy. And I, as a creative, feel that it is my role to own this. I can't go and blame others because the industry looks towards our creative class for the direction, for the future. So we pretty much define design. We make things hot and trendy, and people in the creative community create technologies. So we are pretty much responsible for what directions economy takes. And the decision back then was to form a collaboration network and to create examples, blueprints. And the one what you saw with ocean plastic turning marine debris, trash, into gold and declaring it luxury is pretty much the first attempt to show people how they can approach this problem around material and turn the solutions around that into very good business.
Okay, so you have quite a number of products here in your booth. You have tennis shoes, and you have samples of plastic, it looks like, from the ocean, little pellets, and then you have garments.
Yeah, when you look at that here, over there, it's just a very dirty, screwed-up bottle collected in the Maldives, and
this has been in the ocean?
It has been in the ocean. It washed up on the beach, or it was floating. I can't really tell.
Yeah.
They're catching it. We have like around 1,000 fishing vessels in the Maldives, catching it on the water, but even more people on land. And normally in these countries, especially in small island development states, what we pretty much call paradise,
yeah,
there is no chance to deal with this material. They don't have a recycling system. They don't even have a waste management system. So what we did is we started exactly that. We started to form lots of collaborations and get these people to work with us, and we clean up there and use this trash and give it a new life, put it into yarn and make product from it. And we called all that ocean plastic. That's the trademark we used for it.
Okay, so is this a textile that you're selling, or this is you're only doing your own product?
In a way, what we are selling is a dream.
Okay.
Palais is a dream of we can live on this planet without destroying it. And whatever it takes to make that dream real, we do. If it means that we have to build a supply chain and pretend being material vendors, then we do that for a while. but it's not our intention to become a yarn manufacturer. But de facto, we started a yarn manufacturing and fabric manufacturing business. It's just not my core business.
Yeah.
But right now, everybody can pretty much come and say, I want to create a product, I want to create a shoe, I want to create a dress, and we would have that material.
Okay, so how can people connect with you? Because we have a lot of sourcing people and designers listening to the show.
I mean, they should just send me an email.
Okay.
And there is one email that's not my private email, but it goes directly to my team. It's C, as Charles.
Yes.
At Parley, P-A-R-L-E-Y, .tv.
Okay, Parley.tv. C at Parley.tv if people want to connect with you.
Perfect.
Okay.
For the oceans.
For the oceans. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm at a booth called Neovilli, and there are actually two companies here in this booth. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Milena Amaral. I'm the CEO and founder of Neovilli. Neovilli, it's a platform that contains three pillars. So we have a partnership, and you have an LCA calculator, so a life cycle assessment calculator that calculates the environmental footprint for a specific model or SKU. And then we have also the second pillar of optimization and scenario planning with our partner. Optimization in terms of product design, raw material alternatives. And then the third pillar, it's about offsetting what you have calculated.
Okay, so you help brands identify their environmental impact and measure it, really measure it. Okay. And then your partner company, what's your name?
Yeah. I'm Mark.
Mark. And what's your company and what do you do?
I'm Mark Binder. I'm from ThinkStep, and I'm responsible for our whole global consulting businesses worldwide. We are a company who are specialized and focus on life cycle assessment and product stewardship, helping companies to improve the environmental footprint of the whole company, but also to improve and reduce environmental impact of products within the design process. And we're working also with a lot of fashion brands to determine the footprint of their products and how to optimize that. And that's our part of the partnership. So we are providing the facts behind the platform on the environmental footprint, which then is offsetted and working with Neovilli on the platform to reduce what we can't really reduce in the design anymore.
Okay, so the goal of what both of you are doing is to have kind of a positive impact and positive environmental impact by doing the math and saying what's the negative environmental impact of producing each of our products individually and getting it to the customers. And then once we've done that, how do we also restore? And I think you mentioned before we started recording that if you use a certain number of liters of water to produce a garment, well, can we then also build into the price of producing that garment the cost of cleaning more water, more volume of water than we just used?
Basically, yeah. If we use water in the manufacturing of the garment, how can we give back clean water to the society who will probably take the drinking water away? So making sure that people have enough water to drink in regions where we have water scarcity.
Okay, that sounds fantastic.
So just to complement what Mark mentioned, so our basic plot is that a product will always have a footprint. So what is important, it's really to evolve the model in terms of our fashion system. And from linear to something that it will be bring the resources back to the planet. And it's really have scientific measurement, and then coming back to optimization, and even in the future, going from offsetting to insetting. So really acting in the real value chain of this product development.
Okay, and your website is neovilli.com, neovilli.com, if people want to get in touch with you.
Correct.
All right, thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
I'm in the basement of the concert hall here in Copenhagen, in a much quieter room than I've been doing my interviews in. And I'm here with Allison Sommer, who's the Director of Strategic Initiatives for The Real Real. Hi, Allison.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How's the conference been for you so far?
It's been really exciting this year. The focus on action feels different. Last year was a lot of education. The networking is the same, which is really valuable to begin collaborating and understanding how other people are both understanding the problem of sustainable fashion, such a vague concept, but also approaching different solutions.
So for three people who are listening who don't know what The Real Real is, can you tell us a little bit about the company?
I appreciate that. Of course. The Real Real is an authenticated luxury consignment marketplace. So it's a place where you can come and sell or consign or find and purchase luxury goods that have been pre-owned. So we're a way of extending the life of luxury and part of this circular economy that give goods that aren't being worn extra wares in a longer use life.
Okay. So the company has gotten rather large and you have stores now. Can you tell me about the stores?
I can, of course. Yes, we started in 2011 and started just online. So we had incredible growth through our website, but began expanding into brick and mortar a few years ago, starting with luxury consignment offices. Then we did a few pop-ups, and now we have 3 full stores, 2 in New York City, Soho and the Upper East Side on Madison Avenue, and 1 in West Hollywood.
So is this all consignment, or do you actually buy products from customers and then put them into the stores? How does that work?
The vast majority is consignment. That is the crux of what we do. We don't own the inventory, but we take possession of it and we do all of the work for the consignor, including keeping it safe in our secure e-commerce centers. We do have a few special programs, for example, for watches, where we'll purchase the inventory.
So The Real Real is one of the first kind of big names in this idea of the circular fashion economy,
yeah,
and where the secondary market and all these things are coming into play.
Right.
What's the impact of this new thing going on the environmental impact of the fashion industry? Is it making a major difference if we're starting to keep using things and the sharing economy thing?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of focus on sustainable production, which is super important, right? How are we sourcing fibers? What the supply chain looks like? But we're looking at what happens at the end of use of an item. And The Real Real was founded with sustainability as a key motivator. And we know that that's one of the core reasons why our consigners work with us, because they are also motivated by environmental reasons. And so if something has already been produced and already had its footprint on the planet, then why not make sure that that item is getting the maximum use out of it instead of just producing and consuming more and more? We know that it's an incredible problem. Ellen MacArthur Foundation's Make Fashion Circular report stated that a garbage truck full of clothing hits a landfill worldwide every second. That's incredible. So if we can begin to have a different answer for clothing that's not being used, and in our case, other luxury goods as well. We sell men's and women's ready-to-wear. We're also a destination for luxury jewelry and watches, home and art. But if there's a different answer where somebody can not only help the planet by displacing fast fashion, but instead getting having luxury become more accessible and also have a resale value. But there's also, of course, a financial value to that consignor as well.
So what's the impact of this authentication step? That's different from kind of previous consignment models.
Yeah, absolutely. So we Again, we were founded with a differentiator focused on luxury. Part of that means doing all of the work for the consignor, and part of that also means a level of trust that didn't exist previously in the secondhand marketplace. We stayed far away from the idea of a sketchy pawn shop or a seedy marketplace where somebody's potentially trying to lowball you in order to turn around and make a profit. Instead, for us, not only are our incentives aligned, we earn more when you earn more because it's just a percentage thing, but also we're authenticating every item that comes in. And that's why we take possession instead of having this be a peer-to-peer marketplace. And by authenticating the item, we have a team of hundreds of experts now who know every nuanced detail of different handbags, gemologists who understand how to value a diamond, et cetera. There is that level of transparency as to how we're getting the price, but also the confidence that what you're buying is real. And that's why it's twice in our name.
Well, I know there was kind of a hiccup where there was a controversy about some of the authentication not quite going right. And have you put systems in place now? I'm guessing you have, to kind of step up the authenticity and make sure there's sufficient training.
Absolutely. It's a core pillar to our business. It's something that we pride ourselves in, having these experts that are so well trained, whether their backgrounds are from the brand houses themselves, but also when they get into the real, making sure that there is consistency in education. So there is a strong process to make sure that we know what we're doing.
Have you been seeing products and systems here that you're going to take into account? I know there's one thing called Repack where customers can send the packing materials back after they've received a product and other
That's
things
cool.
like that.
There's such incredible innovation happening here, isn't
yeah.
there? It's really, really inspiring. Again, like everyone's tackling this problem of how textiles and fashion is hurting the environment in such various diverse ways. And I come here and I get so inspired. And there's definitely more and new perspectives that the Real can take back home and apply to our business, how we work internally, externally. We have a lot of exciting things on our roadmap for sure coming up, but we're excited to be here representing the idea of the circular economy. And we know that we're fueling the primary luxury market. And so it's educating the brands on what our consignors are already telling us. They're using their commission right back at the luxury retailers. And instead of investing, or I should just say spending, on fast fashion, they're realizing that if they invest in luxury items, not only do they get a longer use life, but also there is like a net cost calculation. And so the true value, if it has a resale value down the line, is a lot more attainable.
So have you ever authenticated something that was so authentic that you helped put it in a museum or something? do you ever run into pieces that just, okay, we can't sell this, we should just make sure it gets to the Met or something like that?
I love that. Personally, it's not my focus at The Real, the
sure.
authentication. However, we absolutely have gotten some incredible one-of-a-kind pieces. I think that's one of the best parts about The Real is we have customers in more than 60 countries. And so you're always, such high demand that attracts in turn really unique, diverse supply, because there's always going to be a buyer for whatever you have. Some of the most noteworthy items we like to showcase in our stores. And that also has helped us attract really incredible talent as well from the fashion industry, collectors, archival experts, people who know so much about the history of fashion. So yes, we have seen really, really incredible things, jewelry, handbags, everything.
That's great. So what's next for The Real? I mean, you've got two stores in New York, one store in San Francisco or LA?
One store in West Hollywood in
West
LA.
Okay.
Yes.
So are you adding more stores? What are you doing next? What's growing?
We'll see. Brick and mortar has been really valuable for us. It's a great way to introduce new people, not only to the concept of consignment and our version of consignment, again, which is really high end and transparent and, you know, luxury feeling, but also directly to our brand. People who have never consigned or shopped with us, they walk into the store, they might not even realize it's resale, that these items have been pre-owned, other than the fact that there's one of every item. So there's often a light bulb, but we'll explain it. So we are excited to keep growing the way that we have been, you know, millions of members worldwide, and we're not going anywhere. And we, of course, hope also that in a conference like this, there's so much discussion around circular solutions. So the partnership for that I mentioned that we have with Stella McCartney, I see a world where resale is an assumed part of every brand and every retailer. And we're excited to collaborate.
Now, I know most companies, they don't like to put direct contact information on their websites if they have a lot of customers, because the customers will try every contact they can find to get in touch with the company. But since most fashion fans aren't listening to the show, if they're not in the fashion business, do you want to give contact information so brands can reach you for collaboration?
You can always... I think we have an email, partnerships@therealreal.com. Okay. I received that email.
Excellent.
So if you want to get in touch with me, partnerships@therealreal.com. We're excited about...
What sort of partnerships are you looking for right now?
We're looking for, anything and everything. We're such a fast-growing and innovative company that we're excited to hear ideas. The ones that we're really focusing on are those that are driving the circular economy. So encouraging new consigners to come with us and consign for the first time. And then in turn for us to be able to encourage those consigners to shop new luxury with their newfound income and newfound space in their closet.
Now, how does everything is like click to buy? You don't do auctions on your site, right?
We don't do auctions. No.
Would you ever consider doing that if it was like a designer was ending their brand and they wanted to release their archive? I mean, that could be a really special event.
It could be. It's not in our current plans.
Okay.
Our prices are truly a reflection of the market demand. They are changing in real time. And what I mean by that is, as I said, we want to price the item at the highest possible value at which it will still sell in a reasonable amount of time. And so as we see changes in fashion and trends and designer affinity, we have data that, again, in real time, we can see, for example, when Phoebe Philo left Celine, all of a sudden a huge spike in demand for Celine. So we were able to raise prices. And our designer list of what we're accepting is also a reflection of that. But for now, our model is that we set the price as the market dictates, and auctions aren't in the near future.
Well, so there's a list of designers that people can sell through the platform, and if you're not on that list, your products might not go through?
Exactly. So
okay.
We, as part of the curated marketplace, it's a long list, but
sure.
Because we're only luxury, we're always updating our, we call it our designer directory.
Okay. And designers can email you for partnerships if they want to get on the list, I'm guessing.
Partnerships@therealreal.com.
Okay. Excellent. Allison, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
I'm here backstage at the Copenhagen Fashion Summit with Dana Thomas, who's about to go on stage and moderate a panel. Hi, Dana.
Hi, it's great to be back.
I'm wondering what you think of what's going on with sustainability. Are we making progress? Are we moving forward, or is there a lot of noise?
There is, after a lot of talk. You know, this is the fourth or fifth time I've been to this conference, and over the years, I've heard a lot of speeches and felt like nothing was changing. And then in the last year or so, it's ramped up in a big way. You see brands embracing what's been talked about in theory, and they're putting it into practice. Or you hear legislations being passed, like in France this week. Or you just can tell, like, you can see labels in stores, or you can, you know, you go to Selfridges and it's all about sustainability, and then that trickles out. And what I see is happening is that brands are realizing that it's not just a feel-good thing. It's not because we should do it, because it's the right thing to do, but it also saves them money. It's good business.
It's efficiency.
It's efficiency, and it, therefore, if you can get better profits out of the deal too, they do it. And so they're starting to realize that they shouldn't just be greenwashing. They should really be putting some of these things in action, because then they'll have bigger profits and their shareholders will be happy. And if that's what it takes to make it work, then fine. Let's do it.
Now, you have a book that's coming out in September, correct?
I do.
What's the title?
It's called Fashionopolis, The Price of Fast Fashion and the Future of Clothes.
So this is the third book in a series about how the fashion industry works and is changing, and where it's come from and where it's going.
Exactly. I like to think of it as the last of the trilogy. I didn't start it out as a trilogy, but it's become that way. And the first one was how the industry had sacrificed integrity for the sake of profit. The second one was how the industry sacrificed creativity for the sake of profit. And this one is about how the industry had not changed for 250 years since the day that it began, and that in a way it's sacrificed humanity and the planet for the sake of profit, but now there's a call to arms, and here are ways that also consumers can affect change by just becoming better, smarter shoppers.
Do you feel outside of the fashion industry that sustainability is also becoming a lot more every day?
I feel like it's starting to fit into our lives in every way. I mean, in Paris, where I live, you don't get plastic bags at grocery stores anymore. It's gone back to how it was when I first moved there in the early 80s, where you brought your own basket to the grocery store. And I thought that was such a strange thing when I saw it. And now it feels like it's what we should be doing, and that we went off course for a little bit, and now we're writing that course. So you feel it in everyday things like that, which is great. Or that cups are now not made of plastic, they're cardboard and straws. I went to some place and had a caipirinha recently, and the paper straw kind of melted in the glass, but I was still happy that there was a paper straw and not a plastic one. So I do think it's starting to infiltrate all aspects of life, thanks to the millennials and even younger. My daughter's 18, and this is how they think we should live, and they're really pushing it through. I'm of the generation that was post-baby boomer. Our student teachers were baby boomers and hippies in the early 70s. And they were very, you know, there were some, you know, peace and love nicks as student teachers who the first Earth Day, I remember very clearly. But we didn't really take that and put it into action the way the young people are today.
There have been a bunch of kind of big companies on the stage here at Copenhagen Fashion Summit, and they say a lot of things, but what do you think they mean when they're saying all these things? What's the general communication that you feel, and what do you think the truth is in what they're saying?
Well, you know, you can hear some of the corporate blah, blah, blah coming out, and people who know the business, even not people who know the business. My 18-year-old is here with me, and she's like, that guy is full of bunk. I'm like, yeah, he's pretty much full of bunk. You can cut right through the corporate blah, blah, blah pretty easily and see who's sincere and really talking about change and who are just trotting out what they're supposed to say because it sounds good and their CSR people said this is what you need to say.
Do you think Kering is one of those companies? I mean,
No, that's a big move. They wholly believe in it. It's part of their DNA. And that's why they came up with the EP&L, which is super important. And it's now, and they're now sharing that knowledge and that system with companies, you know, competitors, to have them all run more efficiently, the EP&L being the environmental profit and loss system, where you calculate what your impact is on the planet and then you figure out how to either cut that back or offset it. It was pushed through by Stella McCartney. I mean, she was a big supporter of it. It was a Kering initiative, but she wholly embraced it. And she's no longer part of Kering, but it's now in every Kering brand. And you can see that makes for better business, and their share prices are going up because of it. But also, I love the idea that they are not just doing it, holding it to themselves, but they're sharing. Caring is sharing.
Dana, I think it's your call time. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. I'm speaking with Jon Helgren from Repack. And Repack kind of helps consumers get your packing materials back to you so you can use them again and again. Hello, Jon.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this came about, why this is a company, and what's important about what it's doing?
So Repack is kind of an adaptation of the bottle return system. So we thought that that's a great Nordic success story in circular economy, and wanted to apply the same thinking into e-commerce deliveries. So when you buy something online, you can get your delivery in a reusable and returnable packaging, and you keep your goods and you simply return the empty bag to us to be checked and cleaned and then redistributed back to the brands.
I see. And has this mainly been available in Europe so far, or you're also in the United States now?
Well, currently it's used by over 50 brands in over 10 countries in Europe. And late last year we did our first pilots in the US with an outdoor brand called 686. And now this summer we are starting new pilots, another cycle with five other brands in the US. So we're coming.
Okay, so if a brand wants to reach out and connect with you to participate and to purchase the bags to be able to use it for their consumers, how do they reach you?
Well, the easiest way, of course, is to start by checking our website, originalrepack.com. And we have a US team who can help and guide you to fix things up and start reducing trash with our help.
Now, I've heard for many of the packaging solutions that the independent designers have trouble with it because of the high minimums. So someone might have to order 100,000 bags. What kind of minimums do you deal with for working with brands?
Well, one of our main focuses has been small and sustainable fashion brands. So our order minimum is 100 bags per size. So that's pretty agile model for any starting or a small fashion brand.
And what's the wholesale cost in Europe at least?
Currently one repack fee, it always covers the bag and the return, the empty return. So a consumer can simply put the bag into a post box anywhere in the world. So in the US you would put it into a post box and it would come back to us. And that means that one cycle, including a bag and empty return, is about €3 in Europe. It'll be about the same in dollars in the US.
So the bags go back to you, not to the brand?
The empty ones go back to us, and if you make a customer return, then that of course goes back to the brand directly. So if your return rate is, let's say, 50%, half the bags come back to you and you can reuse those again. So that also means that if you pay €3 per cycle, you in fact pay 150 because you can use half again yourself.
Okay, and are these waterproof?
Yeah, just the material that we use is the same as in your Blue Ikea bag. So it's the most important for us is durable. The concept is about reuse, so the bag needs to be durable. It's also lightweight and recyclable, but yeah, it is waterproof. You can't sink it into a pool, but in normal logistics, it's waterproof, yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
I'm at the San Petri Hotel, which I think means St. Peter.
Sounds like that sort of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's the central hotel for the conference for this year. And I'm here with Simon Collins, who has been, did you have a title for the thing you've been doing on stage? Or?
Well, allegedly I've been the co-host.
Oh, okay.
But I prefer to think of myself as general factotum, because I was on the main stage giving a sort of inspiring speech on the first day, which seems to have become my role. And then I also did roving reports from different places around the conference, and I hosted the pitch stage, which for me was one of the most interesting and exciting portions of the conference. Then I brought the pitch stage to the main stage. So I'm sad to say that if you don't like looking at me, there would be lots of reasons at the conference for you to turn away.
It sounds like you were kind of stitching the conference together.
Well, perhaps. This is the third time I've been, and I spent some time with the organizers and with all of the panels, I think, helping them to understand perhaps how we can make each panel more poignant, more valuable. Yeah. Because I have my own conference, Fashion Culture Design, and it drives me crazy when people do boring conferences. I just can't be part of it. And the message here is too important to risk panels that don't deliver and not engaging people in the way that we can. So when I find something I love and I love this conference, I'll do anything I can to help. And that's what I've been trying to do.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty good. What are some of the things that you've helped to institute that move things along?
Well, I'm a big proponent of pointy moderators.
Okay.
I don't like people that say, oh, what's your point of view? Oh, what's your point of view? Tell us what your company's doing. I have no interest in that.
Yeah.
I'm interested in a conversation. That's all. Just a conversation.
Absolutely.
And I think that unless you point that out to people, they don't realize that's okay. You know, and there are plenty of very, very smart people that are not very good at being a moderator.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one small part of the conference. But to me, that's a very important part. And if I've got a brilliant person on stage, I want to make sure I get the best out of them. I don't want to waste the fact that they're there.
Yeah.
I mean, I have too much respect for the audience who've shown up and they're giving their time to give them anything less than the very best that we can deliver.
Yeah. Now, you ran the pitch stage, and I was hanging out. These were great pitches. Can you tell me a little bit about how all that came together?
So the pitch stage is for companies, either startup or early stage, that are doing something significant but somehow have not been included on the main stage. Maybe they haven't had the exposure, or you know, they're not a big enough draw. But to me, that's exactly the people I want to hear from. These are the people that are actually, they've created solutions and they're practicing them, they're doing them. And I'm very excited by that. So I did it last year, and you know, we had 10 companies, we voted, we found the best one, and it was all very nice. But this year I pushed and I said, look, I want these on the main stage. I think all of them should be, frankly.
Yeah.
But if not all, then at least the last two, the final two, which we did.
Yeah.
And I was thrilled for that. The two winners, the two finalists were a company which produces a black pigment, which is used for dyeing, which doesn't come from oil. Now, I believe 30% of clothing is black. Certainly, if you go to anything fashion related, it's like 80% is black.
Yeah.
But the dye to create that is a horrible toxin. So these guys have created a non-toxic, it's made from wood pulp, a byproduct of wood, stuff that gets chucked in landfill or burned, even worse.
It's just, it's the limbs that get cut off of trees that are left on the ground when they haul the logs out.
Yeah, and then they burn it.
Yeah.
So they create carbon. So instead of that, they break it down and use it as a pigment to create black dye, which is incredible. That's what we want.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, Reef Launt, he has created an app which basically connects retailers with resellers so that when you buy something off whatever your shopping app is, you have a button at the side of your when you look at the list of your purchases, there's a button which says resell. And all it does is it connects you via that app. So if it's for a brand or a reseller or something, it connects you with a resale marketplace that's already approved that will handle your product. So you haven't got to think about it. Because you know we're all inherently lazy, like massively lazy.
Yeah.
You buy something from a store, and at the end of its life, you're like, oh, what am I going to do with this? I'll just chuck it away or give it to, you know, Oxfam or something. But most people don't really, they just don't get around to it. This makes it super easy. And time and again, we saw people talking on stage, Vanessa Friedman being a great example, saying to brands, take responsibility for the product after you've sold it. You're big on caring for it beforehand, and we think that's right, but how about taking responsibility after you've sold it? And this was a way of doing that. So just an elegant solution, which is available. You know, he didn't need to go on stage and talk about it and whine about it and be on a panel. He's like, I'm doing it, it's available.
Yeah, and it's in a lot of stores already. He's already deployed quite a bit.
Yeah. And there were 8 more like that. There were 10 overall. You know, there was fake leather made from wine skins, byproducts.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. There was another.
Well, this is the first vegan leather I've heard of that's ready to go into the marketplace and isn't made of dinosaurs. It's not oil products.
It's incredible. And there was a thread which, when you heat it to a certain temperature, dissolves.
Yeah.
So if you want to take your jeans to pieces to recycle them, just put it in the oven. The thread dissolves and it's already taken the bits for you. It's amazing. So there were many, many others. There was a vegetation recycler which made yarn, which you could make any kind of natural fabric from. It was one after another. There were these great examples. And, you know, I think that if the people on stage had embraced all the people on the pitch stage, we'd solve it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, they were given 3-minute pitches, and there were 10 of them. And it was, 15 minutes that were allotted for the
No, it's 3 minutes pitch, 3 minutes Q&A, and you're right, there was 10 of them, so we did several sessions.
So it was 6 minutes each, because I was thinking 10 times 3 is 30, and that's one block of the entire conference. We could have knocked it out.
That would be a pretty solid one, wouldn't it?
But with the Q&A, and the Q&A did add, I mean, we had some great expert panelists who were asking those questions, and
we
really
had people
got to the heart
from,
of the matter,
from huge manufacturing companies and textile makers, and they were looking at these pictures going, this works, I'll take this. I want this. So, you know, and I think that one thing I want to say, actually, Charles, is that Catherine Hamnett is amazing, legend. And she made the very solid point that we shouldn't have a conference because it's a horrible use of a terrible carbon footprint. She's right, of course. But kind of that means none of us should go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we shouldn't go anywhere. We should all stay home or ride a horse or a bicycle. You know, and I know that's not what she means. But I think that just to dismiss this desire to congregate based on the carbon footprint is a great point to make. I don't agree with it, because I think that what you can't, you know, everyone should watch it on live stream is the argument, except if you don't meet anyone. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
And yes, it is a carbon footprint. Yes, we should offset that. We definitely should. But the meetings that happen, the chance encounters, you know, the new knowledge that we gain, not by sitting staring at your computer or your phone, but actually by being in the room with people, I think is important.
Well, who do you think from the United States, from our normal listening audience, should make the trip next year to come to the Copenhagen Fashion Summit? Who needs to be in the room?
Well, you don't need a whole team, but I think any worthwhile company should have a person here. And they shouldn't be here to steal oxygen and sit in the audience and send tweets and then go home. They should be here to engage, which probably means it's not the CEO. You know, I think CEOs are great. They have a very valid role, of course, but they might not be the ones to get stuck in. But you need people that are here that can actually make something happen, that can listen, they can look, they genuinely care. Listen, there were some corporations here who sent big teams of people, and I know that not one of them cares. They want to look like they care. They think they care. They do. They're not bad people. They think they care, but they don't care. We don't need so much of that. We need companies that have a genuine commitment to doing something solid. I mean, I saw some of them on stage. I mean, Emmanuel Chirac from PVH, you know, big company, like one of the world's biggest. But he was engaged. He was stuck in. He wanted to know what was going on, and he had something to say. And I think that getting someone like that on stage and then having a go at them is really valuable, because it challenges them to think more. It gives inspiration to everyone watching. I mean, it's a very solid experience.
I like that with many of the speakers, they would say something at the podium, kind of, and then they bring two chairs on stage and someone would interview them afterward.
Yeah.
So they don't just get to say something and walk off.
Well, this comes back to, you know,
but,
to
but
Eva's...
But I do want Q&A from the audience, and that is not part of the
you
conversation.
Know that, I'll tell you what, though, Charles, you've seen this before. The first three questions you get in any Q&A are someone trying to promote their own brand.
And
when you've got 50 people on stage over 2 days in a very tight time schedule, it's really difficult to do that. There are solutions. Well, certainly we did it at Fashion Culture Design, and they did it.
You can vet the questions.
You put them in through the app, and they did do that here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know they had enough time to actually do justice to it.
Oh, I didn't see them do that.
But, you know, the one thing you can guarantee about a conference is afterwards you'll always be able to say how you could have done it better. Always.
Oh, yeah.
But if you embrace that and you try to do a better job, then I'm going to support you. And I'm a very strong supporter of this conference. I think it's excellent.
So are you back to China after this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Half my life is in China. You know why, though? Because you can make things happen there. You can make them happen big and quick. And I really like that. I'm very inspired. I think the solution to many of our sustainability crises are going to come from China.
Okay.
Because they have the innovation, they have the enthusiasm, the energy, the logistics, the passion, the commitment to do it. And yes, we have those things in other countries, but... You know, we have a lot of things in the way of doing it. China has a certain situation, which when they decide they're going to do something, they just do it.
Yeah.
I don't say they're better people than anybody else or that they're more committed to sustainability than anybody else, but they have certain advantages, and I'm into that. I mean, the thing that I'm doing right now is I'm gathering Chinese fashion executives and bringing them to New York to give them an immersion in sustainability through my We Design program, because I want them to know the best of what's going on so they can go away and create solutions.
Now, is your We Design program centered in China, or are you doing it with people all
so
around
So We
the
Design
world?
Is based in New York, but we operate mainly in China. So we teach kids at any age, plus students, plus junior executives and senior executives. We give them all the appropriate level learning, And we, you know, we're passionate about sustainability. We don't just do sustainability. We do design thinking and myriad other design disciplines. But of course, my genuine passion is in sustainability and pushing that agenda.
Mine too. Simon, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. You must be exhausted. This has been quite a few days.
Do you know, Charles, I don't get tired because there's no time, and I'll sleep when I'm dead.
All right.
Thank you for listening to American Fashion Podcast, a weekly look under the hood of the fashion business. And yes, the oil is leaking, and yes, it's possible we have no breaks. To get on the guest list for our live events, go to AmericanFashionPodcast.com and look for the live shows link. Please continue the conversation from the show on social media. On Twitter, we're at AFPOD, and on Instagram, we're at American Fashion Show. And I personally am at Fashion Tech Guru on just about everything. I meet people all the time who are so excited to hear about this show. A lot of people have heard about it, but not everybody, not enough people know this show exists, and we need your help to spread the word. Please do so. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, there's a Be a Guest form on the AmericanFashionPodcast.com website, but it helps if you've already started a discussion with us through social media. For direct comments, our voicemail line is 646-979-8709. Or email us info@AmericanFashionPodcast.com. American Fashion Podcast is produced by Mouth Media Network, which holds the copyright to this and other episodes of the series, all rights reserved. Subsist, friends. Keep making things beautiful. Remain in force. I'm Charles Beckwith, and we'll talk to you again next week.
This is Mouth Media Network, audio for business.